Welcome to the Jacob's Well podcast. These messages are intended to feed you some great stuff that you can really dig your teeth into all week and beyond. That's why you can find it anytime, along with other great resources and ways to keep the conversation going at jacobs-well.net/leftovers. Enjoy the message.
Hey, good morning, Jacob's Well. So what's your favorite superpower? What's the one you want?
Super strength.
Super strength. Teleporting. I heard a lot of flying. I heard some invisibility. I want the power to park a car in a space that is too small. Yeah, I'm Greg Meyer. It's great to have you all here this morning. Welcome. Glad you're Jacob's Well with us. Before I jump anything else, I have to say congratulations to Mike, too, with Intertwine. I mean, that's just at the beginning part, but I mean, a lot of work to get this momentum and to get the vision, and they're still working on understanding, like, what is it going to be like? One of the things that I hear the most as I actually work around the country with churches is we need more churches like Jacob's Well. You know, we got this one cool place right here, but we need them at a lot of places. And at least so, you know, Intertwine isn't a copy of Jacob's Well, but it is taking what we've learned, is taking our DNA, trying to take our culture, and then figuring out what would that look like in Northeast. And I just think it's a great thing. Keep going, Mike. We're here for you. Yeah. So it's important work. We expect to see a lot more of that happening in the coming years. So let's get used to that. I think it'll be great. If you were here last Sunday, you saw the cross almost tip over and kill me. But more importantly, you saw us all these yarns, these skeins of yarn go stretching out and through everybody and stretching out to everyone, and then we were cutting off pieces of it afterwards and tying it on our wrists. And what that was is a way of like realizing this power that we understand is happening in Good Friday and Easter, this unstoppable power of God's that was there, is running through our lives, and it's with us. It's available to us today. And so that's what that was supposed to signify. And this really kind of helps you understand what we're doing now for these next 4 weeks as we talk about superhuman. Because the thing is, what happened on Easter wasn't just like a big wow because, wow, look what happened 2,000 years ago. I mean, it's a big thing because it is still newsworthy, it is still active, it is still going on in everybody's life everywhere today. In fact, one of the premises of this series, or what we're talking about for these next 4 weeks in Superhuman, is that those forces, what we saw exhibited there, is really the real power of this world, not some of the other things that we often think it is. And, you know, we sometimes tend to overlook it, we might minimize it, we might dismiss it, but it is a real story, it's the real shaper of history. Now you might ask, well, what is that power? Well, that's what we're going to talk about for 4 weeks. I mean, we could talk about it a lot longer than that, but we're going to talk about it from four particular perspectives during this time. But these, and this is really important for us to understand, that these superpowers, the ones that really, really matter in the world, are powers that you already have. You maybe haven't used it as often as you should have, joined the club. You maybe haven't developed it as much as possible. That's also pretty normal. That's how it works. But you have it, and it is there. And when we together start acknowledging, first of all, that these are the real powers in our world, and that they are possible, they're touchable, they're reachable, the things we already know how to do, and then we begin to develop them and exercise them, then we're able to accomplish far more than we could ever ask or imagine. And that's some pretty amazing stuff. Now, of course, this is not the way everybody looks at the world, all right? That isn't the set of powers that most people, even typically, the world pays attention to. In fact, the world tends to pay attention to a whole different set of forces or powers in our world. Help me out here. Like, stereotypically, what does the world really value? What does the world really think makes the world turn around? What? Money. What else? Fame. Ooh. Whatever you said, all of those. Say them again.
Technology.
Right. So all that kind of stuff. And did you say love? Oh, that was a wrong answer. I can do that because that's my daughter, all right? You didn't read my notes before you came, did you? So she's ahead of us, right? That's where we're going, obviously. But the world often doesn't give love credit, and it thinks it's all these other things, these other forces that are out there and that are making all kinds of things happen. Now, I am saying that all those other things, money, fame, power, position, prestige, all those things are not the real shapers of the world. They are not the most powerful forces. They may be the most obvious, they may be the most newsworthy, but they can't change the most important things in life. And this is a fill-in. If there's your outline on the back of your Sunday paper, I invite you to turn that over and follow along there if you'd like to. But I think this is really important. It's kind of a duh statement, but I think it's really true, and it's important for us to acknowledge it. And that is, there's a difference between how much attention something gets and how important it is. There's a difference between how much attention something gets and how important it is. You can follow along up here. So on Friday, you may have noticed that the stock market went up 107 points. But, yeah, right. For those of you who own stock. But at the same time, on the same day, 75 million U.S. parents came home from work and hugged their kids. Yeah. Okay, yesterday, Villanova totally crushed Oklahoma in the semifinals of the Final Four. In fact, it was a record spread. No Final Four game had ever been had that big of a point spread. But also yesterday, 212 million people walked their dogs and talked to a neighbor. I know, I counted. This last weekend, or these weekends, Batman versus Superman is totally crushing the box office, continuing to dominate there and making all kinds of news. But more than 100 times as many people have helped someone that they really didn't even need to help. And finally, a suicide bomber committed an act of terrorism that killed 6 people. Is that right? Killed 14 and injured 61 people. But during the same hour as that bomb blast happened, 21.3 billion acts of love were committed by people around the world. Now, if you look at those two lists, the left and the right, which column, which list gets the most attention, the most headlines, the most recognition? The left, right? Okay. And which has the greater impact on our world? Which is the real shaper of history? I mean, look at it. 107 points in the stock market, that's great, but 75, just think of the cumulative impact of 75 million people coming home and hugging their kids. I mean, how do you weigh these things? So what I'm trying to say, and not everyone agrees with me, you may not agree with me, okay? But I believe that money, strength, fame, and all that rest are not the powers of our or any time. They are not the definers of history. Rather, they are another set of things. What are the things, then, that really make a difference? What are the definers of our history? Natalie, what did you say? Love. Good answer. What else? Hope.
Compassion.
Forgiveness. Compassion. Peace.
Acceptance.
Empathy. I didn't catch that one.
Tolerance to change.
Yeah, of change. Tolerance of change, yeah. Love and justice. Forgiveness. These are kind of soft things out there. Hard to point at. You know, they may make the variety section or a little corner on the front page once in a while. Headlines, not so often. So here's what else I believe. And this idea comes from a verse in the Bible, which is, and you've probably heard, I know you've heard me say this before, to me, I think, just the most decisive verse in the Bible, in this big old book. And I think it is at the heart of this whole series. And it's this. It's from Ephesians chapter 3, verse 20. And it says this. It says, God's power at work within us can accomplish abundantly far more than all we can ask or imagine. Wow. Imagine that, abundantly far more than all we can ask or imagine. I don't know about you, I can ask and I can imagine an awful lot. And God is saying, my power at work within you, and that's a plural you, you collectively can accomplish way, way more than that. So what's that all about? You know, it's these powers, forgiveness, hope, love, patience, tolerance, acceptance, all the things that you were naming. These are God's powers that are at work within us, and they shape the world more than we can ask or imagine. And you say, well, those are kind of normal powers. And I'd say, yeah, that's a good thing that you feel that way, because that's God at work within you. I mean, God is, frankly, kind of normal. God is in all things and in all people and doing this and helping us and teaching us. And these things aren't so important. They aren't so powerful because they're miracles. It isn't that they all defy the laws of physics. I mean, that isn't what's going on here. In fact, what they really do and what makes them so powerful is that they're actually reflecting what our reality is all about. When God, however you want to think about this and talk about this, when God created all things and wove existence together, these are the things that are woven the most deeply down into the nap of that fabric that we live in and we grow in and we breathe in and we find hope and we find our futures in. And so when we tie into those things, we are tying into the things that actually make a difference. We are tying into the stuff where things really come from, not the stuff that's out on the top or hiding on the surface. Money, great. But it's a mere tool, isn't it? And it's as easily used poorly as it is used for good. Physical strength, the same. Fame, position, prestige can be good, but I think often they're more of a trap than they are a help in our lives. So I don't want to underestimate the power and the influence of some of these other things, you know, money, prestige, power, and all that kind of stuff. I don't want to underestimate that. And I don't also want to help us think that they're bad. Now, what happens is those things work on our world and our lives from the outside in. They have kind of that, you know, can I shape you from the outside, the crayon, the you have to, making things happen. Whereas these softer things that we've been talking about that I think are the real powers of God, love, hope, forgiveness, acceptance, they work from the inside out, don't they? They make change happen from inside, and they make it natural. It makes it organic. It makes it real. In fact, I think you'd find that some of these external forces, the money, wealth, power, prestige, all those things, they are used the best and they have the most positive impact in our world when they are tools of those interior powers, aren't they? When they're motivated by things that are from the heart, they have a possibility and the potential to do much greater. Now, I just have to say that I think there's the way the world views power, and that's different from the way that God is encouraging us to understand power. But when I say that, I don't want you to get the impression that I think the world is bad or that all these powers in the world are just bad. No, they're not. In fact, there's a lot of beauty, a lot of potential, a lot of hope within those things. But they aren't the starting point, are they? They are, in fact, by nature, limited. So that's a fill-in here, and that is that the world's thinking is inherently short-term, superficial, and self-interested. Now, I don't mean that as like, isn't that terrible? I'm just saying that that is inherently the way it is. The world is the world. It's made up of things called human beings, like me and like you. And we are finite. We've got pretty amazing heads, but we can't really encompass everything. So we, you know, at our very, very best, it's always short-term, it's always somewhat superficial, and it's always going to be somewhat self-interested because we really aren't capable of doing a lot more. Like I said, that doesn't mean that we're bad. It just means that's our limits. That's what we're able to do. So we need to tie into something that is much bigger than we are. We can't do justice to what the world really needs to be about on our own, or even just when we gather together. We need to be infected. We need to be touched by something that calls us beyond ourselves, lets us touch deeper into that fabric of existence, and we ourselves are able to live, and we have this tendency to live kind of on the surface of it. And that's where God comes in. And so I have to throw out another caveat, because I know when I say the word God, a lot of trains leave the station and they are not all on the same track, you know? For some of us, we're very comfortable with a personified understanding of God and how God works in the world. For some of us, you know, God is more of a representation of a power, of a hope, or of principles. Or some of us say, we really don't even have room for that term in our language, and I'm not comfortable even talking about God. And so like I mentioned on Easter last week, when I say God, I'm not trying to get you to conform to any one of those because, frankly, I'm not trying to. I don't care. But I think we can agree on the fact that whatever placeholder God has in our heads, in our minds, in our thinking, it's in a box. You know, because we are limited creatures. We got to put God in a box. In fact, we do have to do it because we need language. We need metaphors. We need to be able to talk about these things of vast importance. And so we need boxes. We need ways to talk about God. But what we all need to agree upon, and I think hopefully we all do agree upon, is the fact that our boxes are never big enough. Our boxes are simply our boxes. And that we constantly need to grow and break down the walls of those boxes and let God free of those boxes and then admit it is just another box. Hopefully a bigger one, a better one, but still just another box. And we don't need to judge each other for where we are and how in our understanding of God at any one given time. I think what we want to do is learn from each other and help each other have this bigger and greater and more expansive understanding of the world and of that of God. So that's just kind of trying to frame up what we're talking about when we're talking about these superhuman powers that are at work within us. I want to talk about these superhuman powers, these things that when we tap into them, they can help us accomplish abundantly far more than all we can ask or imagine. So what I'd really like to talk about, Jeremy, can you help me here? You have the power to be superhuman. Wow, that's kind of cool. Thank you, Jeremy. So this is this age-old hope to be able to understand the universe, all right? And some of you maybe are fans of British humor and you read The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. So this, take a look at this.
Many millions of years ago, a race of hyper-intelligent pan-dimensional beings became so fed up with the constant bickering about the meaning of life that they decided to sit down and solve it once and for all. And to this end, they built themselves a stupendous supercomputer called Deep Thought.
What is this great task for which I, Deep Thought, the second greatest computer in the universe of time and space, have been called into existence?
No great computer. The task we have designed you to perform is this. We want you to tell us the answer.
The answer? The answer to what?
Life, the universe, everything.
Tricky.
But can you do it?
Yes, I can do it.
You mean there is an answer? A simple answer?
Yes, life, the universe, and everything. There is an answer.
There is an answer, at
last. But I'll have to think about it.
How long?
7.5
What, not till next week?
Million years.
Just everything! You know?
everything.
Exactly. You have to know what the question actually is in order to know what the answer means.
Okay, so it's 42. We'll see you next week. Yeah, and you know, I think actually the perceptiveness of what this question of life, universe, and everything is stronger here than the humor. And if you don't like British humor, that was like an easy conclusion. But I think they're really coming down to something that we don't really know what we're talking about. And I think what we need to do is really be clear of not only, like, what do we mean when you say, well, what does it mean to understand the universe? What does it mean to understand life? What is the meaning of my life and my world all about? We need to understand what is our expectation in finding that out. And I think one thing it means this, and this is where we're going, and what I believe this superhuman power that you have is all about. And first of all, you can't know the meaning of the universe, right? You simply can't. You can't have it all packaged and contained and clear in your head and like you just get the universe. It's not going to happen, all right? But you can be in sync with it. You can live in sync with it. I really believe that, and I'll ferret that out for you a little bit better. We can be in tune with it. Let me tell you what I mean by that. You know, deep thought, the computer said, we don't know what we're asking for in trying to understand the meaning of everything. So let's be clear about the question, about that expectation. And I think one of the things that happens when we get faced with this fact, you know, that we don't understand everything, we can't figure out the meaning of life and everything, we tend to retreat to one of two corners. On the one hand, we just basically give up. Our conclusion is, world is so ununderstandable that it simply doesn't make sense. It's random. There maybe is some sort of logic behind it all, but it's being played and controlled by some arbitrary whatever, and there's no way to predict it. There's no way to know about it. So, you know, you're kind of like just, your life is rolling dice in the cosmos, and that's about all there is to it. It has no meaning. The other extreme, then, that I think we often, or some people would go to, with this unknowability of the universe, as they try to oversimplify it. You know, they try to come up with the 42. They try to come up with something, and it usually, in my experience, sounds one of two ways. One is, there's a reason for everything. Really? Or, God has a plan for my life. In a very rigid, this is what I'm supposed to do. And I have to say, like, seriously, do you really think that is true? Do you want the world to be a way where actually everything is already choreographed and your job is to follow through that maze and never get off of it? Because there is no going back in time and reversing and taking the right turn again. I mean, think about it. So, you know, what God's plan in your life was that you were supposed to grow up and get this training and take this job, right? But unfortunately, the HR department at that company didn't realize God's plan for your life, and they hired someone else. So you didn't get the job that you were supposed to have, so you took someone else's job, whom they were supposed to have, because that was God's plan for their life, and now the whole thing is just messed up, and that actually happened over 1,000 years ago, so we're totally screwed, you know? I mean, you can apply that to almost any aspect of life, to think that God is so concerned about these particular moves and how we do them, rather than who we are and how we employ our life and how we take our gifts and apply them to whatever it is that we choose, you know, that God isn't more interested, as the saying goes, in our character than our careers, is kind of a silly idea, and it just really doesn't work. We can't go there. So this superhuman power of understanding the universe doesn't try to do that. It doesn't try to just know and understand everything or somehow get that kind of clarity. But I think there is something we can do. And it isn't, like I said, it isn't about capturing, it isn't about knowing, it isn't about all this, having it all figured out, but it's in being able to move forward. I mean, I don't believe that understanding the universe means that you know the right thing to do at all times, but it means that you are able to move forward. You're able to move forward. You're able to make another choice. Again, on Easter, trying to think ahead and understanding this power of God that we see in Good Friday and Easter, than we see in our own lives, we have these verses from Ephesians. Paul, this guy who was trying to help the early communities that were trying to follow Jesus understand what this is all about, writes this. He says, my prayer is that you would have the power to do what is thought impossible, to comprehend along with all those who learn to trust God's ways, that you would begin to comprehend what is the length, the width, and the depth of the love Jesus showed us. Because this, and only this, will fill you with the fullness of God. It's going to help you to participate in the world the way God sees it, the real world, the real fabric of existence that God has called you into and has done this. What he's saying is that you aren't going to capture it all. I just hope that you can just do the impossible for a moment. Just get a glimpse of what is going on in this world. Get a glimpse of how God sees things and how God understands things. And God sees the power and the impact and what you can do in your life. And that by seeing that, by getting a little idea of it, it infects you so that you start seeing it more. And maybe you even try it. And by trying it, you learn to trust it, which gives you a chance to glimpse it again and makes you open to seeing God at work in people's lives in these very normal, everyday, game-changing, news headline-worthy ways in people's lives. And you begin to do that. And together then, together we begin to live out the power of God and accomplish abundantly far more than all we could ever ask or imagine. It says here on your outline, comprehending the length, width, and depth of God's love, which is what that verse is, I think is our antidote to the world's short-term, superficial, self-centered thinking. What God is trying to do is take this two-dimensional world that we flattened everything into to try to understand it, to try to make sense of it, and it's trying to breathe into it and turn it into 3D, trying to help us comprehend, just get a glimpse of the height, width, and depth of it all, and to feel that impact and let it move us and change us. That short-term, superficial, and self-interested way of seeing and interacting with the world, like I say, it isn't bad, it's just limited, and we get so distracted by it that we sometimes forget, or we're not able to see, or we don't give it the time to see where things are really happening, and why it was that 212 people walking their dogs and talking to a stranger actually made more difference in this world than the fact that Villanova beat Oklahoma. Golly, imagine that. Some of you don't even know what Villanova and Oklahoma are, you know? So being in sync with God's world means learning a couple of things. And that's what I kind of want to leave you with and let you think about these. And share them with you. Some of them are going to resonate with you more than others, and that's okay. So take the ones that work for you and see what you think. The first is that we need to learn to seek to transcend our own understandings, but turning our brains on, not off, all right? We need to transcend ourselves, all right? We are inherently short-term, superficial, self-interested. God says, I want you to get past that, and I'm going to pull you beyond it. And I want you to do that, but you're going to do it by turning your brain on, not off. There's a popular thought among Christian communities, you know, that God gave us a brain in order to tempt us to use it. No, you know, I don't get that. God wants us to use it. God wants us to think. God wants us to figure things out. We really believe here, and it's something we talk about fairly often at Jacob's Well, that God's wisdom, God's insight into our lives and into our world is counterintuitive, meaning, wow, I wouldn't have really thought about it that way. This is a game changer when I start seeing the world the way God shows it to me. But it's counterintuitive, but it makes sense. Why? Because we also are part of that same, to use that metaphor, that fabric of existence. We too are woven in and part of that same thing that God says, this is how it all really works. So those things resonate with us. They make sense with us. We might not have thought about them. We might not have understood them very well ourselves. But when we encounter them, when we experience them, they make sense to us. And we resonate with that. One of the things that I think about is, if you think about the Bible, God gives lots of commands. If you think about the New Testament, Jesus tells us a lot of things we're supposed to do. But there's not one case where God or Jesus says, because I told you so. I mean, God always appeals to our understanding. God always tries to help us, give us metaphors, give us ways to understand it, so we would say, you're right. I think that is right. I maybe hadn't thought about that. I wasn't really willing to trust it on my own, but maybe I should. Maybe I could. That's first. Another one is to release certainty and look for something deeper and more enduring. Okay, this is one of my drums I bang a lot. It's a Jacob's Well. One of Jacob's Well's hopes is to drum certainty out of any and every one of us. I think it's one of the most deadly things. This is our nothing is written in stone. Stone that has nothing written in stone on it. If that doesn't make your head hurt, nothing will. I think certainty is one of the things that closes us off. It helps. It keeps us from discovering new things. It, it, It's one of the things that reinforces the status quo so that we don't grow and we don't learn. And I think it's one of the things that we need to be able to give up and be open to it. One of the, you know, you aren't hindered so much by what you don't know, but by what you think you know. It's what you are so certain about that is holding you back. I think of the example I read not too long ago about a city planner who was going over the diagrams of the highway in their city and trying to figure out with the increase in traffic what they could possibly do to move all the cars along the conduits of the city that they needed to. And all of a sudden, he realized every car that I'm talking about, almost every car only has one person in it. And he says, the problem isn't that I can't get enough cars down the highway. The problem is I can't move enough people. Right? It's a people-moving problem, not a car-moving problem. And then after trying to puzzle that for a couple of years, he realized, actually, how come our cities are built in ways where people have to do that all the time? I've been, you know, working on the wrong question so long, just trying to move more cars. There was a deeper thing. That certainty needed to be let go, that was the problem, and do something new. Third one, embrace that there is no path through life that only wins and never has regret. All right? Seriously, do you think there's something that you could do where you would never hurt someone's feelings, you would never step on someone's toes, that your picnic that you wanted the good sunshine and warm weather for isn't actually hurting some farmer who needs rain for his crops? I mean, the world is just too complicated and too real to think that you could possibly go through life and not hurt other people and not have regret for it. So just get over that, all right? Life is full of mistakes, missed opportunities, I never saw it coming, all kinds of hurts and stuff like that. And we just need to see that as learning, folks, because that leads us to growing. Regret will happen. You will regret things. The question isn't should you ever have regrets or not, but what do you let those regrets do in you? Do they make you stuck in the past so you can't move on? Or do they motivate you towards creating a future that wouldn't be bound by that, in which there would be fewer regrets? Next one, learn to live with the tension between the details and the big picture of life. Learn to live with the tension between the details and the big picture of life. You are always going to have to choose. Am I going to do what I feel like I need to do right now because this is right in front of me, or am I going to step back and look at what the world is all about and what my life is about in the big picture and make those decisions? Once in a while, we get lucky and they line up. Most of the time, they don't. And there's not a right one to go to or the other. You know, should I be disciplining my child for this behavior right now, or do I back off and say it's part of development and not make a big issue out of it? Is it worth getting my feelings hurt and myself all upset because of what's happening right now, or do I just kind of step back and realize, you know, in 10 years I won't even remember this. Why am I getting all bothered by it? Or is it the opposite? I'm not bothered by this at all, but it's actually, when I think about it, the big picture of my life, this is a watershed moment, and I ought to get worried about this. I ought to do something about it. Which is it? There isn't an answer, folks, right? There is no path through life that is always wins and doesn't have result. It doesn't have regrets. We always have to make those choices between the details and the big picture. The next one, do life together. Do life together. If you want to be in sync with God's vision of our world, if you want to be in sync with the universe, we've got to do it together. Your incompleteness is completed by someone else in some ways. And the way God is going to appear to you, the way God is going to infect you with a bigger picture of the world is often by someone seated in this room right now. It's one of the reasons we gather here together, to encourage, to help, to give advice, to listen to give insights, whatever it is that we need with one another so that we can be stronger together than we are apart. Our ropes that are hanging here, we have this thing here at Jacob's Well that we see all of life as a weaving together three strands of God, self, and others. And we really believe that, you know, that's how it works. We weave these and we are stronger, we are more resilient, we have more capacity to deal with the world around us. We become wiser and we are more able to understand the universe. So I think this is what we're called. God is saying, don't worry so much about having to figure it out. Just be brave. Try something new. Would you pray with me? Stop and take a breath. This understanding of the world needs just us to be alive, to be calm, to be in the moment, to be breathing. God, we'd like to know why. We'd like to know what to do at any given time. We have people in our midst here that are hurting. People have lost loved ones, people who have lost jobs or houses. We live in a context of the racial injustice and all the turmoil that we're finding in our own city around Jamar Clark, and we want to know the right thing to do. We think about environmental issues, we think of the election which is coming, and we want to know what it all means. We want to know what to do. What are we supposed to do? But the answer you seem to give us is that there isn't something that we're supposed to do, only the question that you give us and that you entrust us with of what will we do? You call us to act fearlessly and compassionately, communally, and not recklessly or brainlessly, not trying to resolve everything or even anything, but to be part of things, to engage. Thank you for the promise that you are going to be with us wherever we go, even when our best attempts are short-sighted or superficial or self-interested. We thank you for giving us the people here that can walk with us and support us. To be honest, God, I'd like it to be easier. But then again, I guess I'm thankful that it isn't. I'm thankful that the world we live in seems to have so much more possibility for hope and for love, and so much more reason for me to exist and be a part of it. So be with us and help us to do the impossible. Help us to comprehend, if only for a moment, the height and the width and the depth of your love, and together to be able to do far more than all we could ever ask or imagine. May it be so. Amen.